The participants talked about imposing a price on carbon through gasoline taxes or other formulas. If you tax gasoline, people will be hurt, Cohen said. Even if you tax gasoline and then rebate the money to middle class and working households, commuters would just be forced to take the rebates and go out and buy gas with it, the ExxonMobil executives argued. The nonprofit leaders asked Cohen about the funding he had provided to groups such as the Competitive Enterprise Institute and the Heartland Institute that had so stridently attacked the validity of mainstream climate science. Cohen told them that as part of ExxonMobil's review of its options on climate policy, the corporation had decided to pull funding from the most controversial groups. The disclosure was the beginning of a quiet campaign to clarify that ExxonMobil had altered some of its public policy funding, without quite admitting that what it had done earlier was wrong or misguided. The more strident groups were a distraction, Cohen indicated. They were focused heavily on the validity of climate science, whereas ExxonMobil now wanted to leave that subject to focus the debate on research and policy choices. The participants on both sides spoke gently. They were trying to be ever so polite, Lowe recalled. That night at dinner, she found herself sitting with Dave Kingston, the downstream vice president. In an unthreatening tone, she asked, "Look, you're a science-based organization. How can you not accept the science that is basically confirmed by most mainstream thinkers?" Kingston talked about the inherent uncertainties in weather modeling and forecasting. She listened patiently, then asked, "What are you going to say to your grandkids when they say, 'Grandpa, why did you fuck up the planet?'" The ExxonMobil executive just chuckled. It proved difficult for each side not to simply ratify its assumptions about the other and move on. "They did get defensive, but they didn't lose their temper," a participant recalled. "It was sort of, 'You don't understand.' I felt like someone was sort of patting me on the head, 'You poor thing.'" Some of the nonprofit leaders felt disrespected, manipulated, and sensed little but condescension and closed-mindedness from Cohen's team over the course of the early dialogue. Others left more impressed by the corporation's subtlety and sophistication than they had been when they went in. One guest in the latter group marveled nonetheless about how the ExxonMobil executives were so wedded to their oil and gas image, identity. It seemed perplexing to him that such intelligent, research-driven executives could come up with a communications and positioning strategy that seemed so obviously to be self-limiting, if not an outright loser. Perhaps they let the research tell them what they wanted to hear. On January 11, 2007, ExxonMobil forwarded an email from Ken Cohen to the early participants. The Irving Climate Policy Committee's work had now yielded firm decisions by Tillerson to support a new communications campaign to try to clarify and redefine ExxonMobil's position without creating legal jeopardy. "ExxonMobil's position on climate change continues to be understood by some individuals and groups," Cohen began. "As to the new stance, climate change presented risks," Cohen wrote, "despite the scientific uncertainties, and so it would be prudent to develop and implement strategies that address the risks, keeping in mind the central importance of energy to the economies of the world. This includes putting policies in place that start us on a path to reduce emissions, among other important world priorities, such as economic development, poverty eradication, and public health." Tillerson was prepared to say publicly, "We know our climate is changing, the average temperature of the Earth is rising, and greenhouse gas emissions are increasing." That went further than Lee Raymond had ever gone. Yet Tillerson would not go so far as to accept a causal link between rising greenhouse gas emissions and rising temperatures, the fundamental finding of climate scientists about global warming. In 2007, the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change reported that it was now an unequivocal fact that the Earth's surface temperature was rising and that there was a very high confidence that human activity was a factor. Amid an emerging scientific consensus of such a firm character, Rex Tillerson's evasive silence and small concessions could hardly be counted as a decisive turn. Subtly, however, so subtly that it was very difficult for outsiders to detect the change, the corporation slid during 2007 into a new position. Even after the dialogue at the Ehrlich Center, it was as if Cohen and Tillerson felt they needed to keep auditioning and refining the nuances of their advocacy language in public, adjusting to each audience's reactions, like theater producers developing a risky new musical in secondary cities. In essence, however, ExxonMobil would henceforth decline to offer a formal opinion about whether or to what extent the burning of fossil fuels contributed to global warming, a neutrality that protected its legal defenses. But the corporation acknowledged, for the first time, that it would be sound public policy, nonetheless, to limit man-made greenhouse gas emissions to at least some extent, because of the potential risk that the worst climate change forecasts might prove to be correct. It remained palpably painful to extract this last admission from Ken Cohen's lips, however. "Are you saying you now accept that human intervention is the main source of global warming?" a climate researcher asked during one of Cohen's early 2007 appearances aimed at publicizing ExxonMobil's new lobbying language. "There is no question that we understand the physics of the warming caused by CO2, and we welcome the discussion of what the in-depth link is. We are involved in this discussion." "Still," he went on, having learned by now to interrogate himself before others did, "should we be on a path to do something about anthropogenic emissions?" "The answer is yes,"